this be a special edition built around the movies of Clint Eastwood? With scores from A Few Dollars More, Flags of Our Fathers, Unforgiven, and his new film too. So, do you feel lucky? I mean, you ought to, with all that to listen to. Go ahead, make your day with me, Matthew Sweet, on Sound of Cinema. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
It's midday, and next, Private Passions. Michael Barclay's guest is the actor Hayley Mills.
Hayley Mills was described by Walt Disney as the greatest movie find in 25 years, after starring at the age of just 12 in the British crime thriller Tiger Bay alongside her father John Mills, for which he won a BAFTA. Disney signed her up for a 6-movie deal that included The Parent Trap, In Search of the Castaways, and Pollyanna, for which she won an Oscar in 1961. In a career spanning more than 6 decades, Hayley has gone on to work all over the world in films, television, and on stage. And she's just published a memoir of her early life called Forever Young. It's astonishing, Hayley, to win an Oscar at 14, but you weren't able to collect it in person, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was back in my boarding school, probably fast asleep. And I knew I'd won something. I knew I'd won one because my dad had called me up. But I didn't go and pick it up. And I think they thought, you know, let's keep the lid on things. It's all getting a bit out of hand with this Oscar.
Yeah. But the film I always think of was a British enterprise, Whistle Down the Wind, with Alan Bates. He was a fugitive who some small children led by Hayley, find in a barn. And he convinces them that he's Jesus, doesn't he? I mean, you actually think you're helping someone and you become embroiled in this secret world. Beautiful film, partially because of the setting, but also, I think, for Malcolm Arnold's haunting score. Yeah, I'm just going to lean over to the piano here and just remind people of that tune. But there was a stroke of genius in the use of it, wasn't there, in the film?
There was. To get Richard Attenborough, Dickie Attenborough, to whistle the theme was a stroke of genius, definitely, because he was a really brilliant whistler.
Quite a few of your Disney roles, Hayley, included singing. In fact, you had a hit with Let's Get Together from The Parent Trap. Did singing come naturally to you?
Well, I mean, Let's Get Together was, a gimmick song, and it somehow caught on and became one of those astonishing, bewildering hits. It got into the hit parade in this country and in America, and it got to be number one in Hawaii, which shows how very discerning the Hawaiian public is.
Well, you brought us music today by Mendelssohn, Tchaikovsky and Elgar, but I think this first piece, Maria Callas singing Puccini's O Mio Babbino Caro, takes you back to when you were singing in The King and I in the 1990s.
Yes, exactly. I was having singing lessons regularly then. That's when I discovered Maria Callas. And one of my great pleasures, when I was alone in the house and the children were asleep, I would sing along to Maria Callas singing O mio babbino caro, and it always made me cry. Not my interpretation, hers.
Mio babbino caro,
Maria Callas with O Mio Babbino Caro from Puccini's Giannis Schicchi. Tullio Sarafin was conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra. Hayley Mills, as I said, Walt Disney signed you for a 6-movie deal after seeing you in Tiger Bay. If I can ask you to put modesty aside for a moment, what do you think it was that he spotted in you at the age of 12 that was so special?
I don't know. He was a fascinating character because although he was this great genius and a legend in his own time, he always retained the ability to connect emotionally with stories and people and things. For example, I know that David Swift, who wrote and directed Pollyanna, was looking for little girls to play Pollyanna. Many, many, many little girls they'd got through. But Walt kept saying, "They don't hit me in the heart." And that was what he was waiting for. Just like a piece of music gets you and makes you think, yes, that's it, that's it, that's the one.
Mm. Did you like him?
Oh, I did. I loved him. I absolutely loved him. I would love to see him walk through the door again. He was a darling.
How did Hollywood treat teenage girls at that time? I mean, you were only 12, and you must have been quite vulnerable in some ways.
Well, you know, I was working for a Disney studio. I was in the Disney studios, and it was like a family studio. It wasn't a huge, great factory. Hmm. And Walt wandered around, knew everybody's name, everybody knew him, and he knew what was going on. He was a hands-on boss. I wasn't exploited. It couldn't have been. If you're going to start working, as I did at 12, that's the best place. That was the best studio to work for.
An abiding presence in your childhood and throughout your life has been your sister Juliet, also an actor. Support? Rivalry?
Support. 100% support. And I must tell you, Michael, that, you know, when I did Tiger Bay, which came like a bolt from the blue and nobody was expecting it, my sister, who was 5 years older than me, was an actress. She'd just begun her career at 17, and suddenly everyone was talking about me, which was actually a bit disturbing. and I was worried that she would feel, you know, that it would be difficult for her, that I was getting all this attention and this absolutely wonderful part in a movie. She went to see Tiger Bay 5 times, again and again and again, and cried each time. And she came to me and she said, "Hale, it could have been really difficult for me, you getting this wonderful part. But I've seen the film, and I absolutely loved it, and I absolutely loved you in it, and I'm so proud of you." And that was it.
That's wonderful.
She's been my support and my best friend all my life.
You and Juliet both went to ballet school, and I wonder, since I think she would love to have been a prima ballerina, whether that's what inspired the next choice.
Oh, definitely. Yes. She wanted to be a ballerina, a prima ballerina, with a tutu and doing the solos. And she went off to Elmhurst, and I was sent after her eventually when I was just turned 10. I was sent because I was clumsy. She was sent because she wanted to dance. And so for some time, ballet music, ballet dancers, ballet shoes, ballet lessons, all that was a big thing in my life. And I did fall in love with ballet dancers and music. And, of course, my next choice is absolutely sublime.
Leonard Bernstein was conducting the New York Philharmonic in music from Swan Lake by Tchaikovsky. Your parents, Haley, John Mills and Mary Haley Bell, were both actors, and your mother was a writer, so they knew what you were getting into going to Hollywood at so young an age. Were they nervous about that?
Very nicely put, Michael. Yes. Their hair was standing on end at the prospect. And what a difficult decision for parents to make for their 13-year-old daughter, knowing that if she signed that contract, originally Disney wanted me to sign for 7 years, and I'd have been 20, you know, to tie your child up for that length of time, and you don't know if they're going to turn round one day and say, what did you do to me? I hate acting. I just want to breed horses. Equally, if I didn't sign, would I have turned round and said, how could you do that? You know, what a wonderful opportunity. So they were really between a rock and a hard place. And, of course, it was a big disruption to their own lives as well, because my mother's focus was to be with my father, and he wanted her with him. So there were some big upheavals. And my brother, Jonathan, of course, it was awful. Poor chap, he had to go off to boarding school, kicking and screaming. He didn't want to go because my mum had to be with me.
Mm. The Parent Trap, one of the films that made you famous, was about divorce. Your parents had a famously close and happy marriage, as you were just suggesting. But that is pretty unusual amongst celebrities. Why do you think it worked so well in their case?
I think it worked really well with them because they were soul mates. They found each other. It's a miraculous thing, actually, isn't it, when you, with all the billions of people in the world, you find that one person that you completely connect with. And they just adored each other from the beginning, right through to the very end, when my father died at 97 and my mother was 95. And they died within a few months of each other. He decided he'd had enough first, and then after he'd gone, she followed quite soon after.
Although they had an extremely happy relationship, I mean, no human life is without its problems. And in your book, you describe your mother's problems with drink. Did that have an impact on your life at all?
Yes, of course, because you don't like to see your mother, your father, whoever it is, in distress and not be able to help. And we all kept trying to get her to acknowledge she had a problem and that she needed to go to AA. Or she said, oh, ridiculous, I don't need to go to AA. I don't want to stop. I like it. I like it. She said, I'm like Uncle Bones. Uncle Bones was this Irish relative who died of drink. I said, but we don't want you to die of drink like Uncle Bones. But, you know, she was very stubborn and had an amazing capacity. Could drink everybody under the table and wake up the next morning without a headache. Well, maybe a slight one, but the Alka-Seltzer soon sorted that out. But it wasn't good, ultimately, for her. And alcohol inflames things and inflames situations. That wasn't good.
You want to hear Mendelssohn's O for the Wings of a Dove, I think, for your mother.
When she was at Malvern Girls' College, she was kicked out of schools all over the place because she was so naughty. But when she was at Malvern, she was in the choir and she sang the solo of O for the Wings of a Dove, and she used to play it and sing with it, and she had a really lovely voice.
Well, in this performance, Adam Berman is the soloist.
Thank you.
for the Wings of a Dove. Adam Berman was the soloist in music from Mendelssohn's anthem Hear My Prayer, with Ralph Allwood directing the Eton College Chapel Choir. The organist was David Good. I have noticed already now that we've had several pieces that have a yearning quality to them. Would you accept that?
Yes. Oh, yes, I do. Absolutely. And I must say I'm so grateful some thoughtful person supplied a box of Kleenex.
Your book is called Forever Young, and in it you describe the difficulties of growing up in the spotlight, the pressures, in a way, not to grow up. I think you even suffered from bulimia as a teenager, because you must have felt a bit under pressure to remain looking like this angelic little girl.
It's a strange, difficult, conflicting, complicated period, adolescence, isn't it? You probably had your problems too, Michael.
I certainly did.
You know, I started putting on weight like lots of girls do. And weight and boobs, oh dear, and spots, and actually finding the whole thing rather alarming. Because I was acting, and because I was under contract to Walt Disney, I mean, I still had big bows on my hair and on my bottom when I was 16. And I felt that I was partly longing to grow up and partly afraid to grow up. And this bulimia business, I think it's all about hanging on to what is familiar, which is this child body. And that, I think, is what it was with me.
Well, I mean, everyone always thinks that these eating disorders are confined to girls, but of course they're not. Boys go through elements of this. In fact, I did it. You asked at that age.
Really?
And I was wondering whether you had any sort of psychological help.
You mean, did I go to see a therapist? No, I didn't. Not at that age. No. But nobody knew what I was doing, Michael.
Yeah.
I kept it secret. In fact, I thought I was the only person who was doing it, because I got the idea from a champion jockey who I met in a health farm where I was there trying to lose weight. And he told me that he used to eat grass to make himself throw up. So I thought that was a really good idea. Not the grass bit, but the throwing up bit. So I would eat normally and then go and throw it all up, which was awful.
Well, I think it probably helps other people who are suffering from this to know the things that people went through but then come out of. The next piece of music, the Rodrigo Concierto de Aranjuez, I think you first encountered this in Spain. About this time, actually, you were 16, when filming The Truth About Spring.
I did it with my father and Lionel Jeffries, a number of wonderful, Niall McGuinness, wonderful actors, and James MacArthur, who was my love interest. And I was definitely on the plump side. I was frightfully self-conscious about the size of my behind. But I was in Spain, and I was enraptured by Spain and the Spanish, and I was reading Hemingway, Death in the Afternoon, and I thought that was all very romantic until I actually went to a bullfight, and I thought it was the most horrific thing I'd ever seen and could hardly sit through it. But there was a very lovely Spanish boy who introduced me to Spanish music and, in particular, the classical guitar.
Thank you.
Narciso Yepes was the soloist in the first movement of Rodrigo's Concierto de Aranjuez, a recording from 1969. Odón Alonso was conducting the Spanish Radio and Television Symphony Orchestra. And perhaps what makes that a greater act of imagination is the fact that Rodrigo himself didn't actually play the guitar. Did you know that, Hayley?
No. Wow, that's really... I had no idea.
You can find details of all the music chosen today by my guest Hayley Mills on the Private Passions website, and if you go to BBC Sounds, you can find hundreds of previous editions of the programme, which you can download and listen to at your leisure. In your early 20s, Hayley, you began a relationship with the film producer Roy Bolting, whom you went on to marry. He was more than 30 years older than you and already had six children from previous relationships. Why do you think you were so attracted to somebody so much older, and do you think there was an element of the father figure in it?
Well, people always ask me this. And at the time, I used to say, absolutely not. I've got a perfectly good father, and I certainly don't need two. but I think I just needed that kind of stability. I think that sort of stability, security, was very attractive. But really, the most important thing was that he was very attractive. He was charming and fascinating to talk to and had a wonderful sense of humour. And he was an excellent director. And I fell in love with my director. Age has always been irrelevant. It's always only about making contact with another human being. We were together 7 years, married five, and it produced a wonderful son, my wonderful son, Crispian.
Music from Elgar's Cello Concerto next, with Jacqueline Dupré. You saw her play it on television, and I wonder if you felt a connection with her as a fellow performer, because you were almost the same age, both in your 20s.
I was so, so captivated by her. She was so beautiful, and the way she played the cello, she embodied it. She it was like she and the cello became one. It was an astonishing experience watching her play and seeing her play. And I think she was conducted by her husband, Daniel Barenboim. She was really stunning. And I did see her, not playing, unfortunately, but I did see her a few years afterwards in a car, in the back of a car. I remember seeing her face looking through the window, and I was on the pavement, and this big black car drove by. We were in Harley Street, and she'd obviously been to see a doctor, and she didn't look well, and all that beautiful hair was all looking rather thin and sad. It was a great tragedy, what happened to her. She was very special.
Thank you.
catches us, makes us catch our breath, doesn't it? You suddenly realise, oh, I haven't been breathing for a while, I better start.
Jacqueline Dupré, playing music from the Elgar Cello Concerto, Daniel Barenboim conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra. Your father, Hayley, set up a trust fund to look after the very large amount of money you'd earned as a child, millions in today's money, but he'd been badly advised, sadly, and in 1973 finally lost a long legal battle to stop the Inland Revenue taxing the trust fund at 90%. By the time you'd paid your interest to the revenue and legal bills, I think you were left with almost nothing.
That's right, I was. Yeah. Not right, is it?
How might your life have been different if you'd not lost that fortune?
Oh, gosh. Well, I would probably have a bigger house. I had to ask my father to help with the school fees. I tell you, the most important thing is that it would have bought me freedom. It would have bought me the freedom to say no to a job that would have taken me away from my kids. I had two little boys, Crispian and Ace, at home, and I would much rather have not to have had to fly to America. It sounds, whinge, but that would have given me the freedom to say, no, I won't do, I would, but I had to take those jobs.
Talking of freedom, you did actually turn down another Disney contract at the age of 20. Was that because you wanted to spread your wings as an actor?
It really was, because I wanted to make my own decisions. If a job was offered to me, I wanted to, if I wanted to do it, then I would do it. There were some things that some opportunities that came to me when I was under contract with Disney that I couldn't do because they were obviously, you know, they were considered inappropriate to the Disney image, and things that I wanted to do very much, like Lolita. I was offered Lolita, and I would have worked with Stanley Kubrick and James Mason. You know, I got saddled with an image, with a Disney image, and Sue Lyon, who played Lolita, got saddled with the nymphette image. Well, that was difficult for her, just as my Disney image was. Any kind of image, I suppose, really, is what I'm saying, is difficult.
You want to hear Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. What made you home in on this one, Hayley?
It is one of those pieces of music that always captivates me, and I absolutely adore. I've always loved this.
Thank you.
Music from the Violin Concerto in E Minor, Opus 21. Nigel Kennedy was the soloist and Geoffrey Tate was conducting the English Chamber Orchestra. Hayley Mills, I wonder whether, like some actors, Judy Garland, Lindsay Lohan, you have found it very difficult to put behind you that childhood fame. I mean, I get the impression, actually, that you've dealt with it quite well.
Well, I've had my ups and downs, Michael. When I was much younger, I found it all very difficult. I was very isolated from my peers. People think that if I get famous, if I get rich and famous, you know, I'll have a lovely life and all my troubles will be over. Unfortunately, it just produces...
They're just beginning.
It just produces a whole lot of other problems. And your human problems certainly don't go away. They can be exacerbated, actually, by fame. But, you know, I certainly don't regret the decision my parents made. I adore acting. And it took me a long time to realise that, actually, yes, this is what I was supposed to be doing. Mm. And writing the book has helped me... so much join the dots, really.
Yeah.
Join the dots of my life. And it has made me feel more authentic.
Do you ever watch the films you made as a child? And if so, what do you think of them now?
I watch them from time to time. I foist them upon my grandchildren as soon as they're old enough. Because yeah. Luckily, a lot of them are funny. And they enjoy having a good laugh. And recently, there was a screening at the BFI of Whistle Down the Wind. And it was really wonderful to see that movie on the big screen. And my sons were there, and one grandson, Harry, who's 10, who absolutely loved it. You know, I don't watch them very much, but I hadn't seen Whistle for many, many years. And it was... it's amazing how it's stood the test of time, actually.
Mm. Oh, it's a beautiful film. You clearly take great joy in your family. You have two sons, five grandchildren, and a long relationship with your partner, the actor Firdaus Bamji. And I think this last piece of music, the Bach Air on the G String, reminds you possibly of when you first met in the late 1990s?
Yes, you're absolutely right. We were... doing The King and I together, and we were touring America of 12 months, long time, good enough time to get to know somebody. And Firdaus and I were in a cafe. I don't know where we were. Cleveland? No. Where was it? He'll tell me. And he suddenly leaned across the table and he put these great big earphones on my head, and I heard Bach's Suite, number 3 in D, for the first time, Air on a G String. And if that didn't make me fall in love with him, nothing would.
That was a very crafty move on his part.
It was. It was amazing.
Well, thank you, Hayley Mills, very much for sharing these actually very private passions in some ways. Thank you.
It was lovely to talk to you, Michael.
Thank you. Raymond Lepard and the English Chamber Orchestra with the air on the G string, an arrangement of the slow movement of the Orchestral Suite No. 3 by Johann Sebastian Bach. And that was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions today, Hayley Mills. The episode was produced by Jane Greenwood, and it was a Loftus Media production for BBC Radio 3. And you can find details of all today's music if you search for Private Passions on BBC Sounds, where you can also download hundreds of previous editions. And the programme is back next Sunday at noon when Michael's guest will be the comedy legend John Cleese. You're listening to BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and on BBC Sounds. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news, read by me, Danielle Jaworwiecka. The government has announced a major review into how the authorities handled the case of Arthur Labino Hughes, the boy who was abused and killed by his stepmother and father. The investigation will aim to determine what improvements are needed by the agencies which came into contact with the six-year-old, who died at his home in Solihull. It'll be led by the National Child Safeguarding Practice Review Panel. Social workers saw the boy 2 months before his death but concluded there were no safeguarding concerns. Ministers have defended further tightening travel restrictions to try to slow the spread of the new Omicron variant of coronavirus. Nigeria will be on the travel red list from tomorrow, and arrivals from any country will have to show a negative COVID test taken in the 48 hours before they set off for the UK. The Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab, said incremental changes were better than more severe disruption that would result from announcing wider restrictions in one go. Pope Francis has denounced the use of migrants for political propaganda on a visit to a temporary camp for asylum seekers on the island of Lesbos in Greece. He said the neglect of refugees was the shipwreck of civilization and urged people to treat migrants with compassion and resist national egos. The Indian Army has expressed deep regret for the killing of at least 13 civilians by security forces in the northeastern state of Nagaland. It's reported that a patrol mistakenly opened fire on a group of miners returning home after work near the border with Myanmar. Indonesia's disaster management agency says 14 people have died after a volcano erupted on the island of Java. Dozens of others were injured. Heavy rain falling on the lip of Mount Sumeru caused it to partially collapse. The business secretary, Kwasi Kwarteng, has criticised the failure to reconnect thousands of homes which have been without power for a week and a half. The Energy Networks Association estimates that about 4,000 properties are still affected following Storm Arwen, mainly in the northeast of England. And a climber on Mont Blanc in the French Alps, who stumbled on a treasure trove of emeralds, rubies and sapphires buried for decades, has been given half of them. The climber discovered the stones in a box 8 years ago, which was then handed to the police. And the weather. Scotland will be largely sunny and dry this afternoon, with sunny spells in Wales and western England. That's the BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
Afternoon Concert. A perfect mix of brilliant performances every weekday afternoon. This week, experience the thrill of live music brought to you from across the nations by BBC ensembles. There's shimmering Advent music from the BBC singers. An intriguing mix of ancient and modern from the BBC Philharmonic and the violinist Daniel Puro. And collaborations with some of the most exciting soloists around, including the violinist Pekka Kuusisto and the brilliant...